cause, a principle, aim, or movement that because of a deep commitment, one is prepared to defend or advocate. Karibu. Karibu is a Kiswahili word that means welcome. Welcome, you found yourself in a peaceful place, a place where you can grow and develop, and we hope grow and develop to your fullest potential. This is a podcast that we hope will expand your mind and raise your consciousness. Welcome to The Cause, conversations on music, history, and democracy. Welcome to The Cause podcast. Today we're joined by Colorado State Representative Junie Joseph, who represents House District 10 in Boulder. Born in Haiti and later immigrating to the United States, Representative Joseph brings a wealth of lived experience and commitment to her role as a public servant. A graduate of the University of Colorado Boulder School of Law, she balanced her studies with a successful grassroots campaign for Boulder City Council, where she went on to serve as mayor pro tem. She is also a practicing attorney and small business owner with a focus on family law. Throughout her career, Representative Joseph has been a passionate advocate for social justice, environmental justice, criminal justice reform, and immigrant rights. Recognized as a leader for climate integrity, she has worked to ensure transparency in government, equal access to education, and policies that uplift working people and marginalized communities. Guided by the values that the economy should work for everyone, healthcare is a right, diversity is a strength, and democracy is worth defending, she continues to be a bold and equity-focused voice for the people of Boulder and the state of Colorado. Representative Joseph, my sister and friend Junie, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I think I can go home now.
Stop playing. Welcome to the Cause Studios. It is such a pleasure and a great delight for us to have you here in the studio with us. Now, Junie, everybody knows that we've done a lot of work in these mean streets of Boulder, Colorado, out here shaking things up. But today, I want to start with a biographical question. You know, this is a podcast where people will be listening to this far and wide. Mm-hmm. So, first question, if you will. You have such a remarkable journey from being born in Haiti to becoming a state representative here in Colorado. Could you share a bit about your early life and the experiences that shaped your path to leadership?
Yeah, thank you for this question. And thank you, Dr. Rebecca, for all the work that you do in the community as well.
Thank you.
You have been truly a light in Boulder. So thank you for all that you do. Yeah, I was born in Haiti, as you noted. I grew up partly in Florida. I moved to this country when I was about 14 years old. Okay. And I went to middle school in Orlando and high school in Orlando as well. Yes, my life experience, having been born in Haiti, really shaped who I am today, why I do social justice work, why I want to give voice to the most marginalized. I have seen societies that do not work. I have seen growing up in Haiti, the social, political, and economic dysfunction of the state and how that has permeated throughout society. And that stayed with me even as a young child when I was growing up there. And I knew I wanted to be a lawyer as well at a very, very young age. Yes, because I've seen so much, right, as a child. You may not know how to express what you're seeing, but I knew it was not right, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. So I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer since I was a very, very young person. So I set out. My journey took me many, many places. I at when I graduated high school, I went to a community college, spent 2 years there, and then I went to the University of Florida.
Okay.
And studied abroad, and I had various interests. I'm someone who, I think a lot, and then I enjoy learning about a lot of things. I read a lot as well. Yeah. So I had various interests. There was one time I wanted to be an astronaut. And then I said, well, that's too far from Earth. So I ended up, I wanted to then study sociology. Mm. And I took a few classes in sociology, but I find out that I couldn't double major. Okay. So I ended up pivoting that into getting a minor in anthropology because I couldn't get sociology and political science. Okay. As a double major at the University of Florida at the time. Mm. I don't know if they've changed that, but then I couldn't. So I end up going to England and studying archaeology there. And
in England?
In England, yes. I went to Leicester. And if you know anything about Leicester, your DNA. Do. Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I end up in Leicester. It was wonderful. It was just an eye-opening experience traveling the world. It just opens the world to, it opens your world mm-hmm. as well too, right?
It
and
does.
It opens the world. It's just so beautiful getting to see other cultures. I end up traveling Europe, you know, mm-hmm. going to the many countries to seeing how other people live, right?
Beautiful.
And that was really fun. And then I came back after. And then I graduated from the University of Florida, and I looked at my finances and my family's position, and I said, I couldn't go to law school because I couldn't afford it.
Mm.
So I said, okay, well, then maybe I should try to think of something different. And I end up, applying for a couple of universities in England to study to get a master's.
Okay.
I applied to a couple. I applied to University of York, University of Glasgow, London School of Economics.
Wow.
And I got into all these schools.
Mm.
And after I got into them, again, remember what I said to you about the financials.
Right.
I looked at my financials and I reached out to the London School of Economics and I said, well, I don't have any money. Are you going to fund this?
Yeah.
They said, no. Oh. We already have somebody else in line if you don't want it.
Oh.
So I said, okay, then I guess that's not going to work. Mm. I reached out to the University of York. And they gave me a scholarship.
Wow.
They gave me a scholarship to go study there. So I end up studying to get my master's in human rights. And that really opened the world even further for me.
Okay.
I end up doing a fellowship at the United Nations. I end up interning with the UN. That also opened the world even further. I did an internship in South Africa on Indigenous people's rights.
Oh.
So again, you know, the world is slowly opening and opening.
It's expanding.
Exactly. So I end up in Central African Republic.
Are you serious?
Yes,
you never told me this.
Yes.
Come on, rep.
Yes. I end up in Central African Republic and I was having a ball. I knew that's the work I was meant to do.
Mm.
That is where I was meant to be. Mm. I was just so excited and I was young.
You still are. What are you talking about?
I don't think so.
We still young, right?
We are.
Thank you.
We are young-ish.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I will accept that. Okay.
Right? So I end up in Central African Republic and I was working as a human rights officer for the UN there, and I loved it. I loved every moment of it. I loved the fast pace of the work, you know, and basically what I was doing, I was monitoring and reporting in human rights violations within a humanitarian context, right?
Okay. Okay.
There are humanitarian officers, but I was doing the human rights aspect humanitarian law. So basically reinforcing the state, which was not even there. They did not. Again, that's also part of where I am today, right? Because I've seen governance structures and systems that are so dysfunctional to the point where they are non-existent.
Yes.
So while I was living there, it was a humanitarian crisis and it was a state conflict. And there were times, you know, today we're hearing about genocide.
That's right.
There were times when I was on the ground, there were conversations about a genocide happening in the Central African Republic when I was there in 2017, 2018. And I love the work, but the more I was doing the work, the more I realized something was missing.
Mm.
Again, within that context, you had to be able to frame some of the issues and narrative within rights, within the international rights and law. And I think I did a good enough job, but I'm one of those people, I like to read deep. I like to get into the weeds.
Good. Okay.
I do. I really
you and
do.
I like on that. You already know.
Yes, I do. So I said to myself, I want to continue to do this work, but I need to come back. So I took the LSAT and I applied to law schools and I got into CU. And they also offered me a scholarship again. Okay. I was like, all righty now. I think that's the way to go.
There you go.
So I end up at CU Law. And part of the, for me, when I was leaving Central African Republic, I had a 4 years contract with the UN. And then I said, you know, and I did not finish the entire 4 years.
Okay.
1 year renewable, right. Up to 4 years.
Okay.
And I was leaving, by the way. I understand when people say something having vicarious trauma.
Yes.
And also having, I was feeling bad that I was leaving.
Yeah.
I was leaving. I was serving 75,000 people where I was as a human rights officer and reporting on humanitarian issues that were happening there and crimes. And whatever crime you can imagine,
right.
It was happening in that country at the time I was there. Whether it's rape, murder, everything you can, and everything in between. I did value the work that I was doing. I felt, I just loved it. I felt, you know, what are we here to do on earth but to serve our fellow human beings?
That's beautiful.
Right? Yeah. And for me, I was leaving and I was leaving so many people behind. I felt that way and I felt it was wrong because I was coming back to this beautiful country where, you know, it's peaceful in this country. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wake up every day, you don't think about dying.
Right.
You think about living, right?
That's right.
You're so right. I felt so bad when I was coming back. I said to myself, you know, when I come back to the U.S., I will try to continue to do this work.
Mm.
And being at the state legislature, I truly believe it is an extension of the work that I was doing in that country. Even though you may say, well, Central African Republic, it's not the same as the United States in Boulder.
Okay.
Sure, it is not the same, but to me, it's the same type
there
of work.
Go. Yep, and there are similarities.
Yes.
You know, I just think, listen, thank you for that share. You've just schooled me, and you opened up in such a beautiful and powerful way. I just want to commend you with your ability to be so vulnerable. In fact, I would probably call it radical vulnerability, right? Because you really, there's a point to it. Hearing a bit more about your backstory is so powerful. It's so profound. And I think that's what makes you such an exemplary servant leader today, right? So those experiences compound. And then sweet Rep Joseph, whenever you talk about how difficult it was for you to leave, that speaks to your big heart. Like, you know, somebody don't think of a state, you know, representative, you're doing all this kind of stuff and having a real, like, you still have that level of sensitivity. You're still connected to people, real human issues that are going on, which is why I rocks with you, in case nobody knew that out there. You've almost kind of gone into the second question a little bit. I'm just going to pitch it to you just really, really briefly in case you want to touch on it just a little bit more. But we can keep this organic. You and I always just, you know, we're able to just talk ad nauseum. Wait, before I go into the next question, you know, so much of what you said, I feel like you was talking about me, like you like to read books, you like to travel, you know, you get connected whenever you travel somewhere, you hate to leave, you know, come back and everything like that. And also just the blessing of what we have right here, right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are a lot of people, you know, I've lived in Boulder for about 20 years. I've worked at CU for about 20 years and I'm surrounded by folks who I feel like they either take Boulder for granted or even the Denver metropolitan area. And don't understand how this is an incredibly resource-rich environment, okay? So we have access and opportunities, and I'm looking at what you were able to do. Like, you realize that I've got this one shot. I don't have a lot of money, but I'm going to get there, much like Harriet Tubman, some way, somehow. I'm gonna get there, right? I'm going to make this happen. I hope my graduate students will hear this interview. If they're not tired of hearing the sound of my voice, I hope that you will come and visit with some of them, my graduate fellows. Your story is so inspiring. Again, everybody already knows this. Behind the scenes, I've always supported you. We've always been able to have really, really good relations. I remember when you was campaigning, I was seeing vote for Junie signs all in the yards everywhere. And I was like, that's my sister. That's my friend, you know, and everything. And so again, your story is so inspiring, but your leadership is even more inspiring. And I want you to know that, all right? Next question. You studied law at the University of Colorado Boulder while also serving on the Boulder City Council. How did your time at CU influence your growth as both a scholar and a public servant?
I love that.
Trick questions up in here. Trick questions.
Yes. Oh, I love my time at CU. It's just a wonderful experience and opportunity. Again, as I mentioned to you, for me, I had already started a life. I had traveled the world.
Yeah.
I had seen a lot. But still, there were foundational things that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to come back to learn them.
That's beautiful.
Right? And to be surrounded by our young people, because many of them were much younger than I was at the time. Mm. Right? And that really helped me.
Mm.
It ground me. Right? Because I think as we get older, we forget.
Yes.
We forget many things in life. We forget that we also need to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to be open
and keep
to
exploring.
New ideas
yes.
and keep exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that I had to learn again or be reminded while I was studying at CU.
Okay.
And I had so many young people who worked on my campaign as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
That really helped me. And even today, the way I do the work at the state capitol, I want to be surrounded by our young people,
yes.
people in college who
yes.
are studying, because they know so much more than I do.
Mm.
They're so much more creative.
Yeah.
And they also are aware of things that are happening at the moment that I'm not aware
of.
So they bring me into places and spaces that I would not have gone on my own.
Okay.
So I'm so grateful to have had that experience of, you know, being a law student at CU.
Wow, this is so powerful. Representative Joseph, I feel very similarly that being able to go into the classroom, which I've just come out, as you know, I've just come out of class, you know, being able to go into the classroom with 18 to 23-year-olds, if you see the way they school me, I know I probably shouldn't say this because some of their parents and grandparents are listening, but if you see the way that they actually teach me, I didn't even know the new Cardi B album had come out, right? I don't even know if I knew the new Taylor Swift album had dropped. You know, they told me what was up with it. And so for me, I do think that that is so important. The notion of reciprocity in what we do. So whether you're, you know, in politics or whether you're a professor, the whole notion of reciprocity for me is fundamental to, you know, our shared humanity, what we call Ubuntu, right, as they say, in South Africa. And what you just shared also made me think we share the view that our investment, our interactions with young folk are important because literally they are the future.
They are.
All right? And we have to model for them what different leadership styles look like, right? Obviously, you know, we probably have a bit of some unorthodox, right, ways that we lead and guide and even love, if you will. I mean, on a communal level, on a national level, on a global level, these kinds of things are really, really important. And so this next question is partly connected. This is about your path to public service. You know, I already knew I was going to ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
So balancing law school and a city council campaign sounds incredibly demanding. What motivated you to step into public service at that moment in your life? And what kept you going through the challenges of a grassroots campaign?
I really appreciate this question. What motivated me and what kept me going? Several things. When I went to study for my master's, I had an awakening a bit, because the way that I was taught when I was during my undergraduate years were I was being taught.
Okay.
When I got to my master's, I was told, the professor said, I'm not here to teach you. You are here to contribute.
Mm.
And that stayed with me throughout my life. It just stays with me that wherever you are there to contribute and not to just take.
Ugh.
So for me, running for city council was my way of contributing to the city of Boulder.
I love that.
Contributing to the people of Boulder. That was extremely important to me. And law school itself was not enough. It would not have sustained me. There's something about me and when I walk into a space, just being there taken, because it was an opportunity that was given to me, right? And I also received a scholarship. So I could have just sat there, study and learn and go, but to me that was not enough. I had to contribute. I had to contribute my knowledge. I had to contribute what I see and what I saw back then. Because if you remember at the time, when I got elected, I was the first Black woman elected to the Boulder City Council, we had a Black mayor in the 70s. So between 1970, during the 70s to 2019, it was almost 40 years in between. So for me, when I looked at the city council, most of the people there were homeowners. They were white. They were older. And then I looked at Boulder, this very, very wealthy community. And people were constantly talking about environment, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And when I looked at leadership and the leadership style, right, I did not see what the things that we say we stood for, I did not see them in action.
It was lip service.
So, yes. So, in essence, I wanted to contribute to that dialogue, to that narrative, to that conversation that, hey, wait a minute. Here's what you promise, and here's what I'm experiencing, here's what I'm seeing.
Powerful.
Because when I moved to Boulder, by the way, I couldn't move into Boulder. I had to go live in Louisville. In someone's house because I couldn't afford to live here in Boulder because it was too expensive. The amount of money I had, I could not live in Boulder. And I thought to myself, here's this community. I remember when I saw Boulder online. I saw Boulder, by the way, before I moved here. That's how I knew I wanted to be in Boulder because I saw it. I saw what it stood for. Online.
It sounds good, right?
It sounds great.
It sounds good, but
it sounds
great. They tricked me too, Junie. I came here from Los Angeles, California, though.
You know, and I remember when I was coming, I came with my car. So I had a car. I didn't have a place to stay, by the way, when I was moving into Boulder. So this woman said, yeah, you can come and stay with me and you pay. I paid a little, but again, I said to myself, if Boulder is truly that inclusive community, here I am, an educated woman who had seen the world. The only difference is that I don't have a lot of money.
There you go.
I should be able to live here. I should be able to live amongst my peer, people that I believe we have the same values, except that we don't have the same economics.
There you go.
And that should not be fair. So that's why when I ran on socioeconomic diversity.
Thank you.
Right? The idea, regardless of your socioeconomics, you should be able to have a seat at the table and be able to contribute. So that's why I ran on that. But also another thing that pushed me to run for city council was much deeper. It was spiritual. Yes, it was.
Please tell.
It was much
deeper. Tell. You know, that's one of my favorite topics. I'm about to levitate up in here, man. Woo!
That's funny. So, again, remember I mentioned to you I was living in Central African Republic. Something happened while I was living there because there were a lot of shootings and a lot of killings. And I had seen so much. And I wanted to leave to come back to study law. And I did feel remorse that I was leaving so many people behind. And I prayed on many occasions. And by the way, about 3 months in, something big happened where we were living in a base, in a military base. And people who lived outside of the base, meaning the they were internally displaced people, and they were trying to get into the base. And we were living there, and there were shootings. And so things happened where I was very deeply traumatized. And I thought, I think I need to leave and come back to the U.S. But I wanted to stay and finish my time, by the way. Even with everything that was happening with the killings and the threats of kidnapping of U.N. personnel and all that stuff, I wanted to finish my term and my time. And I said, God, if you allow me to finish my time and my turn, my term, you know, at the particular time where I was working there, I said, I want to come back to the U.S., but I want to continue to do your work. So for me, when I ran for city council, I felt that I was fulfilling that promise, that promise that I made to God and to myself. If I lived to finish my term in the Central African Republic and to come back to the United States, to that beautiful country, I want to be able to contribute, and I will do your work. And that work is to be of service to other people. And that's what I set out to do. And there was no other way. I did not see another way.
Wow, Junie, I got so much. I mean, you just there's so much here. Number one, so your leadership, it's a calling for you. This isn't just a conventional politician. Like, this is a spiritual thing. Like, this is a calling. This is a vocation. This is a mission for you. I mean, does that sound about right?
Yes, it is truly. It is a calling. It is a mission. It is a promise that I made to God.
That is so spirit-led leadership, right? Yes. Spirit-inspired, if you will. Leadership, divine, if you will, divinely inspired leadership. We don't hear a lot of talk of that outside of, if you will, religious institutions per se. And again, we still live in a country where people say there's a division of church and state, but you know, people still, you know, especially Black folk, right, got different ways that we pray about it and keep going on.
Yeah.
I'm also hearing this, your experience in Africa, of all places. Again, I'm a professor of African-American and Caribbean studies. Africa is the birthplace, not simply of humanity, but of creativity. Mm-hmm. Our ideas, like, you know, and again, I see you as a very creative leader. I've seen you, I believe, with school children. I've seen you with elders. I've seen you with, quote-unquote, poor folks. I've seen you with rich folks. I've seen you with straight folks, queer folks, trans folks. I've seen you with, you know, again, there's a diversity. Like, you seem to keep up with the pulse of the people that you're actually leading and serving, if you will. You seem to listen to us. I'm here in Boulder County, baby. So you seem to listen to us and really hear us out, like, sort of how we're remaking, bringing a whole brand new Boulder into being, again, with your leadership. That was one part. The other part, Junie, it seems to me that housing justice is something we don't hear a lot about in Boulder, right? Mm-hmm. Housing, you know, I did episodes on what, environmental justice, food justice, social justice. Housing justice, it seems to me, is a major part of your platform, right? And we do believe that this should be the Boulder of the future has got to commit to housing justice. Would you agree, Madam Representative? Talk to me.
Yes, wholeheartedly. Because when, aside from the idea of wealth,
yes,
housing is about community.
Teach.
When you live in a place, you're rooted in that community.
There you go.
When you don't have a place to stay, you are outside of the boundaries. Mm. You are on the edge. Mm. And when I moved here to Boulder, that's how I felt.
Yes.
I felt that I was on the edge of Boulder. I was not part of the community, even though I was going to law school in the community.
Yes, yes.
Right? And as an institution, often you hear there's collegiality,
right,
that sense of neighborliness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I did not feel it because I was outside, and I wanted so much to be in. And for me to do that work, housing, renters protection,
yes,
it's about bringing people in. Mm. Making them feel connected to the community that, hey, if you're here, we will fight for you.
Mm.
We will fight to keep you here. Mm. And we will fight to ensure that you don't fall into homelessness. Because again, when you see the unhoused,
yes,
it's almost like you're looking at someone from somewhere else. But right. No, they're part of the community.
Very much so. Yes.
They're just disenfranchised from us and who we are and what we do. How do we bring them in?
Mm. Mm.
And how do we make sure that they don't fall,
right,
into homelessness, on the edge of despair.
Right. Wow, this is so very powerful. I want to say to you that I really appreciate your emphasis on socioeconomics and class. This is something that's almost, I'm not going to say it's a dirty word in Boulder. I just think that polite company tap dances around it. There's always like a wordy workaround, if you will. And I'm also appreciating the fact that I'm speaking to a Haitian woman. We're not just talking about race. I mean, so much of this conversation, I feel like W.E.B. Du Bois, so much of this conversation, we're talking about socioeconomics, we're talking about political economics, we're talking about the real world that we live in. Mm-hmm. For me, the socioeconomic part, I think that you're well aware that, you know, I grew up in the public housing projects. I grew up underclass, so not even working class, underclass, Junie. And so I think that that was also something that made me gravitate towards your leadership. You seem to really not simply see me, but hear and feel. It seemed like my vote mattered, right? And that you knew that I belonged here when I came here 20 years ago. You knew that I belonged here, right? And hearing your story, right, that it took you a while to feel that sense of belonging and mattering. I feel like your leadership is going to shortcut years. I mean, there was a full decade, maybe 15 years of being here that I really didn't feel like I really belonged. And I work at the largest employer in the city of Boulder, by the way, mm-hmm. right? That's not supposed to happen. Yeah. I'm not throwing shade. I'm just speaking the truth, my mm-hmm. truth. I have a right to do it. We still live in a democratic society last time I checked. And so it's really important, though, for me to really turn my listeners' attention to the housing justice part of your platform, to the socioeconomics, that you're really concerned about the least of these, you see, the have-nots. We got a lot of haves in bold, but we also got a lot of have-nots, to be perfectly honest with you. We want to make sure that we're not erasing them, that they're not rendered invisible, that we actually are providing services for them. And there should be spaces for people to rise up. Like, this can be a space that people, a lot of us, feel really beat down mm-hmm. in. Your leadership is inspiring. We are building something up as opposed to tearing folks down. Really, really important. Any more on that before I go into the next section?
Yeah. No, I appreciate, as you were talking, I was thinking of intellectual dishonesty.
Yes.
And, you know, living in this community that is, as you mentioned, that is very wealthy, and no one wants to talk about class, race, and economics because mm-hmm. it makes them uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
But they're willing to have conversation with you, me, at parties, right. and take pictures
yes.
and say that we are diverse or we care deeply about mm-hmm. everybody else, mm-hmm. but really we're not doing the work. Or at least when we are looking at the outcomes, it's not there. And I appreciate you saying that. And that's very important to me. Mm. It's important to do that work because we know that the wealthy will always have their seats at the table because they demand it, because they believe they built the table.
Hey.
Right? So they will have their seat at the table.
Right.
I see that at the Capitol, the lobbyists, they demand a seat at the table. But it's the regular people
yeah.
who has to fight. They have to constantly fight to have their voices heard, right? While they're working 2 to 3 jobs. So for me, I think it is important for me to bring their voices to the state capitol and to fight for them.
Junie, come stop it. I mean, this is a love festival up off in here. So much truth. I just really appreciate the commitment to speaking truth to power, right? Even as we work with it. So it's not like you and I are outliers. No, there's nobody more thoroughly integrated into the system, right? The power pulses of the city of Boulder, of Boulder County, than you and I. So we're not speaking as outside. No, we've been here. How long have you been in Boulder? If I can just say for my listeners, how long you been in Boulder?
8 years.
You see what I'm saying, though? Yes. I came here July 27, 2005. Mm-hmm. Like you, I drove in. I did get pulled over. I got pulled over. I wanted to go back to Los Angeles, California immediately, right? This was for me, at that point in my life, this was the greatest opportunity of my life and my career. And I was willing to make a sacrifice. Junie, I tell the people all the time, I'm willing to get out of my comfort zone, and I want to work with people that are also willing to get out of their comfort zone. Coming here from L.A., this was culture shock. Mm-hmm. So I'm already, every day I walk on this campus, I'm already out of my, I'm not asking anybody listening to us, mm-hmm. I'm not asking them to do something I myself am not doing every day that I come to this campus, every day that I walk down Pearl Street or when I go cycling and hiking and all these we're not, this is something that is very, like, we're not, we want to connect with people, but we're going to have to go through some growing pains, Boulder. Right, to do the kind of work, to build the kind of society, the beloved community. You know, I've spoken about this ad nauseum. I mean, until I'm blue in the face almost. But if you want to build a beloved community, we are all going to have to make some sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what you just said about you've seen it happen. We go to these dinner parties. You and I have been at some of the same gatherings, and people do want. You know, they will come and have hushful. You know, quiet conversations with us about certain things. And of course, then there's the inevitable selfie. And a lot of time, Junie, I'm thinking in my mind about James Baldwin's book, I Am Not Your Negro. It's also a documentary. So for any of my listeners out there who want to really read something, it's called I Am Not Your Negro by James Baldwin. I'm also thinking about moments where we can't speak openly and freely, Junie, about some of the issues that we really want to talk about. I'm thinking about Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility as well. Like, what happens when we move beyond our privileges, whatever privileged position we may be in, and really begin to think about people that are underprivileged, that are not privileged, that are disenfranchised, that right now they're trying to rob people of their right to vote. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we got to speak to basic things that are basic to American democracy are under threat. They're under attack. And we need a voice like yours that is going to amplify. Junie, I'm too busy teaching students. So you and I tag team. You can amplify the work that I'm doing, right, in the state capitol. And I want to amplify the work that you're doing here on the Boulder campus. And I think in that way we work together. For me, that's a model of the way a real democratic, you know, society, community, county, if you will, is supposed to work. Unless you have something else, I want to move into, Junie, I know this is a little tongue in cheek. I always like to ask my interviewees about some of their great causes, pun intended. So you saw on the website, my center, the name of it, The Cause, was very influenced by one of my idols, Ella Baker. Mm-hmm. And you are like a modern day, 21st century Ella Baker. The work that she was able to put in selflessly, the sacrifices she was able to make, her fierce sense of Black feminist leadership, her commitment to social justice, to human rights, to environmental rights. I could go on and on and on. You embody, you are carrying a lot of that forward. And I think it's very important for my listeners to know that you come down in a long tradition of leadership, particularly women's leadership. Like, we don't say that enough in this kind of society, of immigrants' leadership. We don't say that enough in this society as well. And so now I want to tackle I got some great causes questions, some great causes and great commitments questions. Are you ready?
Ready or not?
Here we go. We're having fun over here today. This is beautiful. All right. You've been deeply committed to social justice and criminal justice reform, from advocating for bilingual emergency announcements to supporting collective bargaining. What drives your passion for justice, and how do you see these issues shaping the future of Colorado?
I love that. I love the fact you mentioned the bilingual notice. That's from my first year on city council. So thank you for that.
I've studied you.
I've
studied you. I do. I'm a good student. I'm a halfway decent student.
Thank you. That's excellent. You know, I think, again, as I mentioned to you, having been born in Haiti, moving to this country at around 14 years old, I didn't speak English when I first moved to this country.
Wow.
And throughout my life, while I was in school, there were times when my mom would go to the school with me and I would be her translator.
Oh.
Yes. And that was in Florida. And all that stayed with me, all that experience stayed with me. Imagine having a 14-year-old or 15-year-old who just moved to this country translating for their parents. I doubt that I was that good of a translator.
But still, you did it, and look at where you're at now, Representative Joseph.
Thank you. But still, I wanted to make sure that when people need support, that they don't have to rely on their families entirely. And what if the person do not have access to that friend or that family member? The state should be able to provide a certain level of support for them. Mm. So for me, that was extremely important to do that work. And also, too, again, as we've mentioned earlier, the wealthy will always have what they need. And to your point earlier, that's the world we move in, me and you. Yeah. We know a lot of wealthy people.
Absolutely.
And I engage them and they're my friends, and that's fair. But I also want to make sure the voices of those who are marginalized and disenfranchised are heard. Mm. But also, too, to your point earlier, the reason why I really do this work, someone paved the way for me.
Mm. Teach.
I did not show up here all of a sudden, Junie Joseph, state representative. Someone laid the groundwork for me. You've laid the groundwork for me. You've been in Boulder for 20 years. I've only been in Boulder 8 years, right? For the last at least 12 years, you have done the work. You have done the educating that maybe you were not thinking that, hey, you know, when you first got here, you probably were not thinking, I'm laying the groundwork. Right. I'm teaching people so that when Junie comes in 2019, they will vote for her. You were not thinking that way, but you were doing that work. Mm.
Thank you.
That's why I do that work. Mm. The NAACP as well, we're doing that work. Yes. They've been doing that work. That's why I'm here, because someone else did the work to prime the ground for me to be here, to make it acceptable, because you know there were a time it was not acceptable.
Oh, please. I mean, in some quarters, it almost still, they like taking us backwards, but I'm going to leave that part alone. I really, really love this part where you talk about, you know, I like it. I want to invoke Harriet Tubman, something that is attributed to Harriet Tubman when she said it's important for us to be able to make a way out of no way. Mm-hmm. And then I think about Septima Clark, mm-hmm. Ella Baker, mm-hmm. Fannie Lou Hamer. Mm-hmm. These are way makers. Mm-hmm. These are bridge builders. You embody some of that. And I want to say right here while you're sitting across from me in the studio, I want to say it to your face and your eardrums. Be encouraged. Keep doing your work. We rarely say this. You and I both know there's a great deal of resentment for people in political office right now. Mm-hmm. I don't care what party you're in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of resentment. Mm-hmm. And so when you come across one, now you notice you're the first one to be on my podcast. That's got to say you're the inaugural. Right. And I'm very selective. Junie, you know me personally. I'm a very, very selective. This is my baby. This is my platform. I'm building it up. Junie, I don't even do social media. Mm-hmm. John does it. Bless his heart. John Arnold, my podcast producer. I'm shouting him out. So he does all of that. I don't do all of that. And there's a sense in which I'm also changing with the times. This is me hanging out with 18 to 23 year olds for the last 25 years that I've been a part of the professorate. Mm-hmm. They influence me. Mm-hmm. Right. I love the part where you and I both are acknowledging publicly how we inspire each other, how we understand ourselves to be tag teaming, how we love Boulder, Colorado. And so if I criticize it, it is only because I love it. Did your mother ever say, no, that skirt is a little too short, or what you wear is a little too tight, baby? You're going to have to go and check. Our parents didn't say that because they hated us. Mm-hmm. They did it because they love us. So what about love-inspired critique? That's something that if we're going to have a beloved community, we have to have love-inspired critique. I hear a lot of your positions, a lot of the policies you sign on. That's love-inspired, though. We're doing it because we're trying to not only we're trying to not only have an impact on the present, I want to ensure a future. See, my students won't be here. They will be here when I'm long gone. I want the world to be better because I came to Boulder. And Junie, I want people to know that we were here. See, they're going to know we was here whenever we go. They're going to know we was here. How do we make our mark, and how do we empower people who don't have a lot of money in their bank account? I want them to know that they have power and that together we are powerful. That's why we run around saying Harambe. Harambe is a key Swahili word. Let's pull together, right, and work together to achieve a great goal. That's your campaign. That's a grassroots. That's the kind of campaign you run. Look, Junie, I've been studying you. I'm like a Junie Joseph scholar right now. Much research I done to get ready for this show. I can go all the way back to your first position, everything. I know all about it, you know. And so for me, it's a real honor to sit across from you. Let me go on to the next question. As someone recognized as a leader for climate integrity, you've been outspoken about environmental justice. How do you connect climate action to the everyday concerns of your constituents in Boulder and beyond.
Yeah, that, you know, environmental concern should be a concern for all of us.
Teach.
All of us. And there are times, too, again, when we're doing social justice work and mm-hmm. why I do the work the way that I do it. I'm very intentional in the way that I do housing.
I've noticed.
Environment.
I've noticed.
Right? Because we can always have the academic conversation, right?
Theory,
right?
What about the practice,
exactly,
though?
And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And who are we involving as part of that practice? And what does it truly mean, right?
Teach, Julie.
Again, as you know, environmental issues disproportionately impact Black and brown people.
Go ahead, teach.
Right? That's why this work is extremely important to me. As you know, as you're aware, Boulder, their number one priority from the time I was on council till today remains the environment. Right? But it's how do we do that environmental work?
Right.
How do we do that environmental justice? I've ran really interesting and good bills in this space to make sure that people have access. And I remember one of my bills that I passed a year ago or two, and it was around subsidies, bike subsidies.
Yes.
And I remember the conversation.
I remember that bill.
Right?
Yeah.
And also there were EVs, right?
Yeah.
Not everyone can buy an EV,
but someone
can buy a bicycle, right?
Yeah.
So an electric bike.
Thank
so
you
that,
for that
that's part of that conversation. Yes, maybe you cannot buy a mansion that has all the bells and whistles when it comes to the environment, but are we retrofitting some of our renters, right?
Yes.
One of some of those rental apartments.
Yes.
To make sure that people have similar access.
I love it.
At the end of the day. So again, that's the conversation. I remember when I was on city council, we wanted to build housing near a pharmaceutical plant. And I remember voting no against that particular policy because again, they wanted to put housing.
Good.
Near a place where they know there, if there is any type of toxic or disaster, right, at that pharmaceutical plant, who would be the first impacted? Those people living there. And I had to remind my colleagues that that is not fair. If you're building housing, you don't want to build it affordable housing next to the highway.
Yes.
Because you understand the environmental impact of building housing there. Because you would not put wealthy people there. Why do you put working people there? Right?
That's right.
So that's the conversation that I bring to the table or into the room when we're having those conversations. Yes, I want to do the work and I'm excited to do the work. Mm. But how do we do the work? How do we show the love that we show to people? Right? You know, we don't want to give people the things that we don't want.
Thank you. Because that's not charity, if
it
I can be
not.
Perfectly honest. You're not doing us any kind of favor. In fact, you're harming us.
Yes.
And it'd be better to listen to folks like yourself, right? And the community. Mm-hmm. Who, like, we can articulate what our needs are, right? Mm-hmm. And what we want to do in the beloved community, we say a core principle, we want to place human need over human greed, right? We want to place people over profits.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beloved community. It's about principles, right? Mm-hmm. It's about us committing to those. Junie, I also want to say this to you. I can only imagine how emotionally exhausting this work is. You know, again, I mean, you've been there for me. You know, we don't even have 50 Black faculty members here at the University of Colorado, at least not tenure track is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And so this can be a very isolating and alienating environment. I am on a lot of the big committees and everything, but I'm often the only one.
Mm-hmm.
That's draining. Right. This is 2025. We're in the 21st century and we're still the only one. That's tokenism. Right. James Baldwin. I am not your Negro. I'm not going to be your token. Right. And so I just want to acknowledge that. I think it's very important to acknowledge leadership costs. You know, that great Frederick Douglass quote, you know, that power concede nothing. It's not going to be given to you. Yeah. You're going to have to fight for it. You're going to have to sacrifice for it. Now, when I say fight, of course, I'm a pacifist. So I'd like to do things peacefully. We have too much war going on in this world. And anybody that wants to go and keep fighting and stuff, that they have no place in the beloved community. Like, that's not what we do. Mm-hmm. Right. So we believe in peace. But you and I both know with the environmental issue, often in Boulder, I'm not aware of folks saying, or at least having a deep discourse on environmental racism. See, if you put the public housing next to the plant and understanding the toxicity of the soil, right, and all the things that could go wrong, and inevitably they often do go wrong, mm-hmm. right? Why do the poor folks, why do the working class people, why do people who are underclass and working class have to be in such close proximity to these spaces? Well, you won't put the nice suburban mansion next to it. You wouldn't allow that. Mm-hmm. So why do that to somebody else? It seems to me that your work also helps to expand the very notions of human rights. For me, mm-hmm. living in a safe and healthy environment, that's a human right. Having education, clean water, decent food, right? Food justice, mm-hmm. right? I mean, these are, how do we remix, Junie, the discourse on human rights in the 21st century in a space like Boulder, where there's often a lot of lip service and it looks good from the outside, like you, I don't know, somebody must have sent me to the city of Boulder visitor center or something like that online. It looks so, it was like, I thought I was going to hippie heaven. You know, I thought this is it, man. You know, I made it. I'm finally in the suburbs. A guy from the projects, I'm in the suburbs now. And then you know how they lied to me? They said, Professor Rebecca, it is as though Boulder is to Colorado to Denver, what Beverly Hills is to Los Angeles. They said, oh, you know, Boulder's nothing but a suburb of Denver. So I thought, okay, I heard of Denver. You know, I ain't heard of nothing about Boulder. So I thought, okay, fine. I go out there. Junie, the level of isolation, the level of alienation that we often experience, and it's not simply cultural. It's economic. Mm-hmm. And I think you help us to fine tune and turn some attention to that. Like, we're not really talking about a discourse on race per se. We're talking about class. This is also something that tripped a lot of people up about my intellectual idol, W.E.B. Du Bois, mm-hmm. right? He talked a lot about being conscious of his class before he was conscious actually of his race. Come on now. You got anything else for me?
You know, exactly as you mentioned, that Boulder is a very dynamic community.
It is.
And
it
there
is
a lot of subtleness.
Yes.
As it relates to the class dynamics, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, the way we talk quite often about equity, diversity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we care deeply about.
Yes.
And we do, and we have done some work in that space. I mean, this is a majority white community,
right.
And here I am as their elected representatives. So they are doing the work,
yes.
right? But there is still more work to be done.
A lot more.
And I think there's something that you also mentioned, and if I can say anything to the young people who mm-hmm. are listening,
thank you,
is that you bring someone with you.
Mm-hmm.
You, your job is, you know, if you get here to see you, is not to hoard the knowledge, is not to close the door behind you. You have to open the discourse and open opportunities for other people to also engage and be right in the room as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I do the work that I do as the, you know, the first black woman too,
yes.
in the House district.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I want to continue to have the conversation about equity because we're not there yet.
Yes.
And that's the point too, is that if we're not careful, we could say, oh, yeah, because I'm the state representative for the district, then there's no issues with race, class, and any other. You know
everything
what I mean?
Is fine.
It's solved. All the problems are solved. But no, that's not true.
Right.
Right? I had to work really hard to get into the room.
Mm-hmm.
And now the work begins.
Wow.
Right? And
yeah.
now we have to do even more work.
There you go.
To make it sustainable, to make it durable.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And not to just be happy with, how do I put it? Kind of the appearance of equity, diversity,
good.
And inclusion.
Right. So there's symbolic.
Yes.
Right? And then there's the substantive.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted
yes.
for this center. I did not want a symbolic center.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted something that we can have a small recording studio in and do real work. I
mm-hmm.
want to be able to teach seminars in it. I want to be able to have lectures in it. You do know I want a whole building one day where we can have a whole, you know, I want dance classes and African drum class. I want the whole nine up in here. Listen, Junie, I think it's also important I want to encourage people to be ambitious. Mm-hmm. I think a good leader is incredibly ambitious. Mm-hmm. However, a good leader is also able to tap the resources so that it's not just a dream, like mm-hmm. we turn our dreams into reality. Do you realize you are sitting in a dream that I brought with me from Los Angeles, California 20 years ago? This center was a dream, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying in Boulder, mm-hmm. this was able to happen. You are absolutely correct. Boulder has changed a great deal mm-hmm. in the last 20 years that I've been here. I've tried to make my contribution. That's why I loved it so much earlier when you talked about not just taking, but contributing. For me, that is the ethos. That is the culture mm-hmm. of this center, of the beloved community, reciprocity. Mm-hmm. So in fact, my grandmama, she's 98 years old, taught me that I should give, always give more than you take. Mm-hmm. Ooh, imagine mm-hmm. if we lived in a world like, I know they're going to make fun of me, Junior. Imagine if we lived in a world like mm-hmm. that, where all of us committed to giving more than we take. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. those who have more, mm-hmm. please give more. Mm-hmm. Junior, I have access. Mm-hmm. You know, I sit around every day. The University of Colorado Boulder, bless their hearts, they pay me to read books. Now, mm-hmm. you know I'm a geek. I read 3 to 4 books a week. Can you imagine that? They pay me. I love them. I appreciate them. Thank you. But at the same time, so now that I'm doing all of that, I loved it so much when you said, share the knowledge, though. I'm not just keeping it to myself. Me and my little friends in African-American studies, we're so cool and we go around condescending to people. No. Mm-hmm. In hip-hop studies, what we say is each one teach one. Mm-hmm. So by the very fact that you were taught it, mm-hmm. you're supposed to share it. You're supposed to teach somebody else. That's why I've been teaching hip hop out here for 20 mm-hmm. years. That's why it works. I mean, Rebecca, Boulder, it actually kind of works. Now, of course, the beloved community part, I think that it's been really important for me to move beyond some folks who would want to make it a buzzword. And mm-hmm. I think that you have gone really, really far in helping to concretize it, to make sure it's not just an idea, but we translate it into action. Mm-hmm. So the incredible work that you did, I'm going off script. So the incredible work that you did with the MLK Highway, the MLK Memorial Highway, I commend you.
Designation?
Yes, I commend you. I mean, this is the mm-hmm. effort spearheaded by yourself, the NAACP. There were so many. That's real. Mm-hmm. There are actionable, tangible things that you have done. I hope that you, hope that inspires you. I hope that, you know, hope that you can see that your work is not in vain, that it's actually having a significant impact, on us. And so please keep it up, keep doing it. I'm going to go to the next question. I know you probably got to run out of here soon. Here we go.
It's 5 o'clock. Have a lot you want to get to.
No, I got 2 more questions and we're done. So
sorry, just ignore me. I'm taking.
We're gonna be economic now. Is that okay?
Yes.
All right. So we got 56. But John, all of that is all of that usable, or is it gonna be a double episode? Are we gonna have a double?
It could be a double. It flows very nicely. So
yeah, it's organic.
Yeah, it's very organic.
Like you can see, we just vibe. We just vibe. Okay. So we're gonna close out. So I have 1 more question and then I have a closing question. So we got 6 and 7. Yeah. All right, here we go. Oh, Junie, are you having as much fun as I am?
I am. This is so much fun.
We need to do this annually or something. Yeah, we need to stop playing, though.
Speak with the representative.
Seriously. Junie, for me, it was the point that you made about how hard you work to get where you are, particularly in terms of you're at the state capitol, you're a representative, our representative. It's not simply getting there. For me, in terms of political science, as you know, it's how do you stay there?
Yeah.
And even more that, how do you move the needle of those, whenever you get there to the state capitol, how do we actually transform the space? I would like to think CU is different because I served on the faculty here. I want to practice, watch this, Junior, I don't want to get you in trouble. I want to practice institutional transformation. Yeah. So instead of me just criticizing mm-hmm. CU, right, mm-hmm. for all of the, you know, stuff that I decided to actually work with them, mm-hmm. right, to transfer. And the more I've done that, well, you're sitting in the center now, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It actually, it can be transformative mm-hmm. on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. I also don't think I, have to be antagonistic with folks in power. I want to actually have some conversations with them about what it means to share power. I feel like you, a representative being here in my center, this is an example of shared power, right? Please, yes. Talk to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love what you just said. Mm. As a, you know, as an elected official, I do believe there is opportunity to change the system. You mm-hmm. have changed the university. You have changed the face of Boulder, CU Boulder. I would imagine there are people who looked at the university, not knowing whether they want to come and study here, and they look at the center and they say, this is exactly where I want to be.
Wow.
Right? Because of the work that you're doing. And that's my hope, that the work that I do at the state capitol will inspire young people here in Boulder at CU to run for city council, to run for the state legislature. When I look at myself, I want other young little black girls and black boys to run and not think about, oh my God, it's too white or it's too this, it's too Hispanic, or it's, I, you need to run, because when you run, you're not running for yourself. It's not about the color of your skin. Yeah. It's about the vision that you have for the community and a vision that is relatable, right? Those are the important things. So I'm hoping that when I'm done with my 8 years, if I choose to do my full 8 years at the state legislature, is that when a newcomer comes in, they will do the work, even as well too for House District 10, regardless of their race, whether they're white, Hispanic, or anything in between, is that they will have seen the work that I have done, and I will have inspired them to be a little bit bolder.
Ooh. Judy, you better stop. That sounds like a campaign slogan. I'm getting ready for your next office. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. For me, Judy, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to go directly to the question. I just enjoy speaking with you, so forgive me if I just dial it down for one moment. I, as you know, have an intellectual love affair with W.E.B. Du Bois. And you know, his father was Haitian, you see? And so one of the things that motivates me is that in his last letter to the world, that's the title of it, My Last Message to the World, he published it in 1957, Du Bois said that I hope something I have done or said or written will inspire some future generation to build on the work that I have only begun.
Yeah.
What you just said about the future person that will be in that position, I just want to give him a foundation. I feel like what we're doing, we're doing what we're supposed to be. We're laying a foundation. I want some progressive folks to come and build on it, right? After you and I are in retirement. You know, I'm never going to retire, right? But anyway, after you are somewhere chilling, we probably go to Haiti chilling, right? Yeah. I want to go back to Port-au-Prince. There's so many. I love Haiti, by the way. The other thing that you said, for me, I actually, how I've been able, my relationship with Boulder changed when I started focusing more on the allies than some of the ignorant things that I've experienced with, you know, racial microaggressions. So as you can clearly see, you've seen me out. I have a lot of beloved community members, a lot of allies who rock with me. I focus more on working with them than the people that may be working against me or think that they're working against me or whatever it is that they may think. I try to have a laser-like focus on love, on building the beloved community. And I see a lot of that in the work that you're doing. Here we go. Next question. You've also spoken passionately about equal access to education and immigrant rights. Drawing on your own experience as an immigrant and first-generation leader, what progress have you seen in these areas, and what do you think still needs to be done at the state level?
Yeah. We've made a lot of progress.
We have.
We have, but we still have a long way to go because, you know, if we think about 400 years of oppression, it will not be relieved in 8 years because of my tenure at the state legislature.
Okay.
So it takes all of us, not just some of us, all of us. And we also have to lean in on our allies, right? And we have to also, at least for me too, you know, there were things that you mentioned earlier I was thinking about. We have to get past what people look on the outside.
Yes.
Right? Because you see me, you say, oh, yeah, Rep. Joseph, Rep. Junie Joseph. There were so many great people in the community who supported me, who carried me through city council, right? And, you know, white women who really wanted to see the face of the Boulder City Council change as well. And so were also my black family members and friends and allies in the NAACP who fought for me to become a state legislature. All these people were there with me, supporting me. And so to your point about, you know, whether we have done a lot of work, we have. We have done a lot of work to diversify the community. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. When we look at all the work that we have done, it seems on one hand we're doing a lot of work, and in another hand there are forces trying to destroy all the good work that we have done. Yeah. Regardless of where you stand when it comes to the NAACP, I find it very troubling that we don't have an NAACP branch in Boulder. Liberal Boulder.
Right. It's shocking.
That our NAACP branch is no more. Right. Regardless of where you stand, again, you've seen the work.
Yes.
I am the work that they have done on the ground for the past many years. You are the
Absolutely. They're instrumental in helping me establish the center. Come on.
So we have done the work.
Absolutely.
The bilingual educations that we have done. I've passed so many bills in that space, in the bilingual space, to ensure that or Latino and Latinx communities have access to the government.
Right.
And so that language is not a barrier. And then we have our current administration coming into to different cities, snatching people off the street. That's, and one hand, we're doing the work. On the other hand, we have forces that are destroying the very work that we're doing, making community members fear the very government that is meant to protect them.
Wow.
Do you believe, or do you think that someone who are a non-English speaker, or even if they speak English, if they know the federal government is snatching people off the street, do you think they can differentiate between the state and the federal government?
Right.
No.
Mm.
They will be fearful of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. We're doing the work.
Right.
While we're doing the work over here, there are forces on the other side trying to undo the very work that we've been doing over the years. But the thing is, as you've mentioned, is that we have to continue to be hopeful.
Absolutely.
I'm very hopeful. I'm hopeful to be here. I'm hopeful to be an American, because
bless you.
Imagine with everything that is going on at the federal level, I can sit with you and have those very conversation and criticize them. We can sit here as a representative from Boulder and point to the things that are not working, right? And still be elected. And you still coming back to work tomorrow. There is hope.
Yes.
There is hope. And we need to hold on to that hope for the next 3 years, because we know the administration will change. And hope for a brighter future will be.
Junie, Representative Junie Joseph, this is so powerful. I have one more question, but before I do, you've said so much. And I would be remiss if I did not, in a very sincere and vulnerable way, at least just share some in real time response. I want to say to you directly, as my sister and my friend, something that I learned from years of studying Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to combat a kind of pervasive pessimism, right? Certainly at the end of his life, you know, they were going through the Vietnam War. You know, he's a pacifist. And so obviously war, it depresses me. I mean, I'm living in a world. I actually thought post-COVID there would be no more war. I mean, I'm silly. I know y'all going to laugh at me. But I actually thought that after being surrounded by so much, you know, apocalypse and disease and death, I thought that there would be a new humanity that would emerge post-COVID. I'm going to give this. So in the face of the pervasive pessimism, in the face of, you know, one step forward, two step backwards sort of thought, Martin Luther King Jr. teaches about critical optimism. I want you to hear that phrase, critical optimism. And so for me, you are absolutely correct. How is it somebody at your level with all that you have going on, how do you stay motivated? How do you keep going? And I would say to you, as a professor of African-American studies, you know, I think about the ancestors. I think about them going through the Middle Passage. Mm-hmm. Representative Joseph. They had it worse. Mm-hmm. We can get through this. It's not great. We shouldn't have to still go through it. But we will survive. We will make it through. I feel like Gloria Gaynor. I will survive. You know, I love disco. You know, I love disco. I wrote a book on Afro disco divas. Junie, this is important, though, for people to understand that for me, one of the reasons you are sitting here with me right now, you are one of my sources of inspiration. You've suffered a lot of setbacks. I looked at your life story, right? You've just given us some color commentary here in the last 35, 45 minutes or so. And some way, somehow, you're still here. You're not only just surviving, you're thriving. You're still fighting for us, not just yourself, but you're fighting for us. And we are recognizing progressive allies that we are doing this work with. Again, I'm just saying, for any of our listeners, because, you know, Boulder can quickly get it twisted. We, the beloved community, we welcome all. If you really want to do something, not just talk about it, but actually do something, join us in the work that we're doing. I'm about to close out for you. We got one more last question. Oh, Junie. Woo! Okay. When you look ahead, what is the big vision that keeps you waking up each day, energized to serve? And what kind of Colorado do you hope to help build for the next generation?
What kind of Colorado do I want to build?
Please.
You know, when I was younger, I knew that I wanted to make a difference. And I think when you're young, you're thinking of, you know, the difference as something splashy.
Yeah, yeah. Big. Woo! Yeah, dude.
Grand. But, you know, I think now that I've lived as long as I've lived, I think the difference in your community.
Yeah.
If that's all you can change, that's a big change in itself.
It's huge.
And that's my hope, is that, you know, just in this House District 10 that I can make a difference. In that, you know, when a young Black girl wants to run for city council, if she hears no, that she knows that there's someone who tried it at a time where it could have seem impossible, right? When you look at the demographics of the community.
Okay.
When you look at where I came from as well, too.
That's right.
Being born in Haiti, coming here as a student, and being working class, right? In a community that is uber wealthy, and still be able to thrive and do it, you know that you can do it.
Wow.
Because I hope that this work that I've done, I've primed the ground a little bit because of the work that you've done, Dr. Rebecca, because of the work of the NAACP.
That's right.
That I make it a little bit easier for the next person, right? And that they know that they can do that work. To me, that's my hope. And also, I want to continue to do the work of the justice.
Yeah.
And every day, or quite often, I do self-assessment where do I still live those values? Am I still working toward those goals and those promises that I made to the people of Boulder when I ran for city council and now at the state level?
Okay.
Because it's so easy for me and to get distracted
by
the people that I meet. Because, you know, you meet some of the most wonderful people.
And they big time,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are. I might forget for a moment where I came from. But I need to be reminded.
It's true.
And that's very important to me as I'm doing the work, that I'm reminded of the promise that I made when I was in Central African Republic, and who did I promise that I would be fighting for, right? And advocating whose behalf. So to me, that's the work that I try to do. And I hope that, you know, whether it's on environmental justice, housing, education, criminal justice, and LGBTQ+ rights.
That's right.
this work, that I make it a little bit easier for all working communities, for members of the LGBTQ plus community, yes, to be at the table. Mm-hmm. That's my hope. Mm. My hope is that I've made it a little bit better, because I know that the big work of inclusion and of diversity, mm-hmm, it's hard.
It is.
Because there are so many forces that are very powerful at play that are not necessarily want to play nice, yeah, right? Yeah. And want to play fair, right? But at the same time, yeah, I'm hoping that as I'm doing this work, that they will have their space in their voices, will continue even when I'm not there. Ooh. Because my job is only 8 years, up to 8 years, that though this work will continue on, and the next person will be even more vocal and do the work,
wow,
as well.
Wow. I hope that we will be able to refer that future person to this episode. We are thinking about them right here, right now.
Yeah.
It makes me think of the novel by the great Ghanaian novelist Ayi Kwe Arama. It's called The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born. Mm-hmm. The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born. And so I'm thinking about future generations. As you know, there are a lot of folks who came through here and paved the way so that I can be here. I honor them. I acknowledge them. I have a special responsibility, I feel, mm-hmm, to them about what you just said, self-accountability. You are holding yourself accountable. Like, your constituents don't have to come up and wag their finger in your face. Sometimes I think we are our own harshest critics. So, you know, we're gonna have to practice some self-love and some self-care. But at the same time, Representative Joseph, I often feel that I'm not doing enough, if I can be honest with you. I feel that I'm in a resource-rich environment. Mm-hmm. There's more opportunities out here. I have greater access. I myself obviously don't have any monetary wealth, but spiritually, culturally, yes, intellectually, I'm a trillionaire. You know what I mean? And so for me, that's my value system. Is that's what my grandmother, my mother instilled in me, that my poverty doesn't deny my human dignity, mm-hmm, right? And I think it's maybe that's how I've been able to stay here for 20 years, because I don't feel like anybody is better than me. We are literally equal, and money doesn't make somebody more moral. We already know that, right? And so for me, as we close out, I just would like to say once again how much of a great source of inspiration to me and to so many of us, folks that they haven't told you yet, and I hope that they will when they hear this show, just send you a word of encouragement, a note of encouragement. And you're absolutely correct. Your story is an incredibly improbable story. What you shared with us, coming from Haiti at 14, right? Growing up working class, not having enough money to go to school, but some way, somehow going. That is the most improbable story, but it's also a very American story. It is what the best of this country is about. It is what the best of American democracy is about. And so if nothing else, we want the listeners to get a sense of what radical democracy sounds like, of what that future democracy sounds like, of what the beloved community sounds like. And as we close out, I just want to thank once again Colorado State Representative Junie Joseph, my sister, my friend, a great source of inspiration. She represents House District 10 in Boulder, Colorado. Representative Joseph has been a passionate advocate for social justice, for environmental justice, for criminal justice reform, and immigrant rights. And we've just heard her share very vulnerably her special story with us all. And I'm just geeked out by the fact that this story is taking place right here, right now, in Boulder, Colorado. Mm. Let's continue to build the beloved community here in Boulder, Colorado. I'm your host, Rayland Rabaka, and this has been The Cause Podcast. Until we connect again, keep loving, keep learning, and keep listening.
Thank you for joining us for The Cause Podcast. with Dr. Raylan Rabaka. For your letters, questions, and suggestions regarding the podcast, email us, thecause@gmail.com. C-A-A-A-S. We may even read your letter on the air. The Cause Podcast with Dr. Raylan Rabaka is produced and edited by John Arnold and is a production of the Center for African and African American Studies, The Cause, at the University of Colorado Boulder. For more information, visit us online at colorado.edu/center/cause, C-A-A-A-S.
Class is in session, so come and get your lesson. Ooh, The Cause Podcast. I love that. Do you love that?